We're holding on Remchess 7 days, the last few lines on the last line. We learned yesterday about the different kinds of, we learned there's two or three different kinds of Arev, two for the most part that the Gemara is dealing with over here, a regular Arev versus an Arev Kavlon. We discussed what makes him an Arev Kavlon. Rashi said that he actually handled something involving the Arev or some metalin or whatever. Tosfos and most other Rishonim say that it's just a matter of the Lashon that he used, whether he said, lend that guy money and I'll be the Arev, or whether he said give him the money and I'll give you. Which in that case, that second case is the Arev Kavlon, where you, the Malva, have now the right to go after him instead of after the Loiva. And we talked about at the very end whether when you become an Arev for a Ksuba, are you Bechlau, are you really being Meshabed yourself? Are you really saying that you are accepting on yourself the requirement that you may end up paying off this ksuba? So now we're going to discuss that some more. Because one way of looking at it is, so we said that one of the last things we said is it may depend on the question in general when you have an Arev Kavlon. Is he really accepting on himself that requirement, or is it maybe something more like an asmachta? It's not a serious undertaking. And it may depend, we talked about the question, does the loiva have property at the time? If he does, then you could argue, okay, this other Kavlon figures, you know what, at least I'm willing to take on this responsibility, because yes, I may have to pay back, but eventually I can go after him. I'll have what to be able to go after him to get reimbursed. Whereas if he doesn't have, then maybe he didn't really take it on as a firm commitment. It's more of an asmachta.
So by Ksuba, we said, get married and I'll be responsible.
So yeah, but that's what an Arev Kavlon would be. But then we discussed even if we say that an Arev Kavlon is under a shibud, does that also apply in the case of a ksuba? So that's what we're going to get into now. Itmar, Arev de ksuba. If somebody becomes an Arev for ksuba, divrahakolay meshtabed. Everybody agrees that he didn't really take on the shibud, even though he said I'm an Arev. Does not really mean that he. The wife or Yoshin can go after him to pay back the ksuba, and then he's going to have to get reimbursed from the husband. Because there's two things. First of all, he's only a regular order, not an order of top one. So a regular order of the chlau, you can only go after him only if the other person defaults. And second of all, in this case, as Gemara is going to point out soon, there's actually two other factors that are unique by a ksuba. Number one, she didn't actually lose anything. It's not like in the case of a malva, he actually gave out money, whereas in the case of a ksuba, she didn't actually give out money or a talplin or what have you. And also, there's the fact that he did it for the sake of facilitating a mitzvah. So if he's a plain artiv, everybody agrees that he's not under a shibud.
If the
husband or his estate defaults, then you go after him. Kavlam debar chayv. On the other hand, let's talk about not a ksuba but a regular chayv, and not a regular order but an order of kavlam. Divrahakol meshtabed, and then everybody would agree that he's under a shibud. Number one, because he's a kavlam, and number two, because the malva is actually giving out money on the basis of his promise that I'm going to be the order. So therefore, he's actually meshabed himself. What about Arev debachov v'kablam deksuba? What about then the two intermediate possible cases? A regular Arev for a regular debt, or an Arev kablam for a ksuba? Pligi. Then there is actually a machloikus. Ikal man da'omar, one man da'omar says, afagav de lesle v'lichzir aloiva meshabed. One man da'omar says in both those cases, even if the loiva, or in the case of a ksuba, the husband, doesn't have nechasim, he's still meshabed himself, even though he's not an Arev, even in the case of a chayv, even though he's not an Arev Kavlon, just a plain Arev, the very fact that the other guy is willing to trust him, that's a certain hanah to him. Similarly with an Arev Kavlon of a ksuba, because after all, he is an Arev Kavlon, which is a stronger thing. The Ikalam under Omer, and then you have a different opinion. Isle meshtabed, ilasle meshtabed, no, only if the loiva, or the husband, has nechasim, then this Arev Kavlon by a ksuba or regular Arev by a chayv will be meshabed himself. If not, then he's not really meshabed himself. It's more of an asmachta. It's not a firm commitment. The hilchasa, the bottom line halacha is the kulu afagab de lesle meshabed with all of them. So regular Arev or an Arev Kavlon, with all of them, even if the person on behalf of whom he's an Ariv does not have anything right now, Meshabed, he's still Meshabed himself, because again, if the Hanah that the Malveh is willing to trust him. Barma Ariv Giksuba, except for the case of an Ariv on a Ksuba, a plain Ariv, that is not an Ariv Kablon, of a Ksuba, the Afagav the Islay Le Meshabed. There, on the contrary, even if the husband has Nechosim, where ordinarily in the case of an Ariv, then we would say that's enough for him to have a smichus daf, but then, okay, I'll have what to get paid back from, so therefore, I'm willing to be an Ariv, I'm willing to be on the hook to pay it to pay it back, because I know I can go after him. But in this case, then no, he's not Meshabed himself. My time,
huh?
A regular Ariv, I'm saying a regular Ariv by Ksuba. An Ariv Kablon by Ksuba would be Meshabed himself. But if he's a plain Ariv by Ksuba, then he would not. My time. A plain order, the usual rule is the malveh, or in this case the woman, can only have to go first after the regular responsible party, the lawyer or the husband, as the case may be. Only if that person defaults and does not pay it back or doesn't have what to pay it back or whatever, then you go to the Ariv, and then the Ariv goes and takes the other person to a din torah, the lawyer to a din torah, and then gets
realized.
An Ariv Kablon, that's what we're saying. An Ariv Kablon, the Malveh has the ability to go after either one of them, whichever one he wants. He could go after the Ariv Kablon if he wants.
Without
having to first say, let me first see what the Loiva has.
Yeah.
And then there's a third one that we also talked about, Tosfos had brought up yesterday, a third one called Nosav and Nosav Biyad, where this Ariv actually says to the Malveh, you give me the money and I'll go bring it to the Loiva. In that case, then the din is the Baal Chayiv can only go after this Ariv. He cannot go after the Loiva at all because he didn't give anything directly to the Loiva. The Ariv was the go-between.
Right. So we say that in the case of Ksuba, the Stam, Kablan.
Not Kablan. Kablan isn't Shabbat. A plain Ariv is not. My timer, mitzvah hudavah. Number one, because he's doing it for the sake of facilitating a mitzvah. So therefore, you can argue that he's doing it in order to make the wedding happen, but not that he actually wants to be Meshabed himself. And number two, v'loy chosra, v'loy midi chosra. And number two, she's not losing anything by it. She didn't give out money. And as we said yesterday, yosef amasho ish roitzel linasa ish roitzel linasa. A woman wants to get married more than a man does. So therefore, she didn't lose anything out of it, unlike a malveh who's actually giving out money based on the Ariv's promise. Which then Tosfos points out, the Gemara's point is, therefore, you need both of those factors. If you had a case where there's a mitzvah, but she's not losing anything, and Tosfos gives the example, let's say the guy became an Ariv only after they got married. So they got married, there was an ordinary ksuba written, without an Ariv involved. Then afterwards, he volunteers to become an Ariv. In that case, it's true, like chosra midi, she's not losing anything at that point, but there's no mitzvah, he's not facilitating a mitzvah, the mitzvah's already done. Therefore, we would say he's Meshabed himself. And the same thing, Tosfos doesn't talk about the other way around, but it would be the same thing the other way around. If there's no mitzvah involved, if there's a mitzvah involved, but like chosra midi. You need both factors, and you need both factors in order to say that he's not Meshabed himself. Yeah. There is, by the way, a machloikus within this whole business of Ariv and Ariv Kablon, the machloikus between the Rambam and the Ravid. What if the Ariv made a pinyin? The Rambam was in today's Shloisha Prakam of Rambam. The Rambam also discusses it in Hilchos Malveh Loiva. The Rambam says that even if he makes a kinyan, that a regular Ariv, even if he makes a kinyan on a ksuba, he's still not Meshabed himself. Only as we said, if he's an Ariv Kablon, unless the Ariv is the father, which we said yesterday at the end of the Gemara yesterday, that because it's his father being an Ariv on behalf of his son or on behalf of his daughter-in-law, really, then that's different. He's willing to be Meshabed himself. And the Ravid disagrees with that. But no, even a plain Ariv, if he makes a kinyan has to be strong enough that then he actually is Meshabed himself. Okay, now we got into this whole discussion because we were discussing an issue that Gemara brought up yesterday. We had the opinion of Marzutra Brezer of Nachman, that when we say in our Mishnah that a woman collects a ksuba only from Ziburis, he had said that that's only if she's collecting from the Yisoyim, after her husband died. So either he divorced her and then he died, or he died like a chassila. But if she's collecting directly from him, he argued that she should get from Benjamin. So that brought us into this whole discussion about that our Mishnah had talked about that a ksuba fisha gets from the Buddhist, and we talked about how that can relate to the matter of an Arev.
From the
Yisayimim, you always get from the Ziburis.
Even a Ksuba,
yeah. That's that we argue that that's what we said. Even though there's Meshukhino, we don't allow that to override the usual rule that from Yisayimim you get from Ziburis. That's what Mazurfa is arguing, yeah. And that brought us into the whole matter of an Arif, because we said maybe our missionary is talking about the case you're not actually collecting from the responsible party, but rather from an Arif. So now, getting back to that discussion, let's bring a proof from the basic takana that we have over here. We said that the reason why a woman collects from zibur, this is yoseh masha ish reitzali, so ish reitzali nothing. Even more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married. Now, if you're going to tell me that when does she get from ziburis is only what she's collecting from yisoyim, haimishim diyasmihu. Then the reason she's getting from ziburis is not because she had more of an incentive to want to get married anyway, and therefore we don't have to give her bayinus to give her more of an incentive. It's rather because she's collecting from yisoyim, proving, in other words, that it's not just a matter of collecting from yisoyim. And there you have a different reason why she gets ziburis. The reason why she gets ziburis in the ordinary case must be, as we said, because she has more of an incentive to get married in the first place, and therefore we don't need to give her the extra incentive of bayinus. Shufta de Mazutra. So that's a clear contradiction against Mazutra. So there's no difference between whether she's collecting from him or from the Yisayim. Either way, it's always the Boris.
Even
from the husband. In
one case, she has an incentive to do so, not the other one?
No, so we're saying that's the thing. We're saying we don't need to give her the extra incentive to get married. A woman has more of an incentive to want to get married anyway. Therefore, even if she knows she's only going to get the Buddhist land out of the deal, Nevertheless, she's still willing to get married on that basis. Whereas a Balchoyd, as we're going to say soon, he wouldn't be willing to lend money on that basis. One thing the Beit Shmuel, by the way, points out, nowadays in our Ksubas, we write that the Chosin writes over there that I'm taking a shibur that you can collect with Shvar Alag Nichsin Bekinyonim from all the best of the land or properties or whatever that I have. And in that case, then that overrides this. Fine. If it's written in the Ksuba that she's entitled to collect from Edith, good. Then she's entitled to collect from Edith.
That's only if you're married, if you lost.
Ah, so what happens after he dies? That is actually the next piece of Gemara we're going to have over here discusses the case when you have, this is not the next piece, but the next piece after that, further down on the Amud, we're going to discuss the case. If you have somebody who ordinarily is supposed to collect from Edith, does he still, if he's collecting from Yisoyim, does he still collect from Edith, or maybe does he get downgraded to Ziburis? We're going to have a discussion about that in the Gemara, and there is a machlokes rishonim who the halacha is like. If we say the halacha is that you can bind yisoyim even to that, then yes, then the deal with Ksuba would apply even after he dies, that she can still collect from Edis. If not, then taka not. Then in that case, she is downgraded to Ziburis. There's no reason to go to bayinus either way. There's no specific thing that would be bayinus.
If he dies, then the Nisa collects from what?
That's what we're going to discuss in a little bit. Right. We'll get to it further down on the other. Okay. It is the next piece of the model. Omama Zutra Breder of Nachman, Mishmeder of Nachman. Shtarchoi Mayotze Ala Yisayim. If you have an IOU against the Yisayim, meaning that their father had borrowed money from somebody and now he died and the guy is trying to collect from the Yisayim, Alpha Pisha Kosov by Shvach, even though it says in it that he agreed, he made a deal with the Loiva and Malva made a deal together that he will be able to collect from Yidis. Nevertheless, he can still only collect from Ziburis. It's true, it says in the Shtar Yidis, but because you're collecting from Yisayim now, that the rule that you only collect from Ziburis from Yisayim overrides that, and you're down to Ziburis.
By default, but if he had agreed with the Malvi that the Malvi would after instead collect from Yidis, what would happen?
No, that's what we're talking about. Alpha Pisha Kosa by Shvach, even though it says in it Yidis. Okay, you're right. Before we do discuss the question, are we talking about that it just said Sam Shvach, but it didn't say anything about what happens after he passes away, or even if he explicitly said that after I pass away, you're still entitled to collect some Yidis, do we still override that? That's the whole thing that I was mentioning a second ago.
Right.
So you have two different opinions about it among the Rishonim. Okay. I'm going to buy a Teda. Rabbi says, yeah, you can actually prove that. Look, I mean, you have the ordinary case. The Baal Chayiv usually collects from Beninus, but if he's collecting from Yisayim, all he's entitled to is Ziburis. So yes, by the same logic, even if you made up Yidis, it doesn't change anything. Ziburis is Ziburis. Amalei Rava, Hachi Hashta. Rava says, how can you think to compare the two cases? Balchoiv, Dinim Midaraisa, Biziburis. The truth is, Midaraisa, Balchoiv is only entitled to Ziburis anyway. Kidya Ula, like what Ula says, Amal Ula, Dvar Torah, Balchoiv, Biziburis. Minat Torah, when a Balchoiv collects from land, all he can collect from is Ziburis. Shenema, the Pasuk tells us, when it talks about the din of taking a mashkin in Parshas Kitetzei, Bachutz, it says you're not allowed to go into the guy's house to take a mashkin. Bachutz Tamar, you have to stand outside. Well, Ishvavimah, and a man who owes you the money should bring you out a mashkin. Now, ma davka shel ish lahoitzi, see what kind of thing does a person bring out of his house? Pachas shel kelim. Usually you bring out the least valuable of your kelim. So, and that's the Buddhist. Now, with that said, Tosfos points out, I mean, we're not the Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma, which we'll learn in a few months from now, later this year, Be'ez Hashem, that only with land is there really a difference between Idis and Veininis and Ziburis, the different grades of land. When it comes to Metalpilin, the din is everything is considered Idis. Why? Because even if you can't find somebody to sell it to over here, you can always find someplace else where the thing will be saleable. And whatever it is, it can always somehow or other be turned into cash. So therefore, any kind of metalpilin are considered aegis. So what kind of proof are we bringing over here from the guy who brings out a keli, which is the Buddhist among kelim? Kelim themselves are all aegis. So Tosfos says basically, Marsha and Maram Shif argue what exactly Tosfos means. One possibility is that Tosfos is saying is, just as when it comes to bringing out a keli, the guy will tend to bring out the least valuable keli. Which, granted, as far as halacha is concerned, it may be considered idiot, but nevertheless, it is the least valuable of his kelim. The same way, when he's giving away land, he'll be giving away the least value. He'll be giving away the least valuable land.
So why we're given this example of a guy who goes to his house?
No, but the point is that we're saying when a guy is bringing out a mashkin, he's presumably bringing out the least valuable thing, right? So that's the thing. So one way to explain it, Marsha explains that basically what Tosfos is saying is it's sort of one of these in lozek, snei in lozek kind of thing. Since you can't say that there's a difference what kind of keli he brings out of a mashkin, because the fact is no matter what kind of keli he brings out, mahalacha is considered meitav as far as paying off the debt. Therefore, we have to reassign the pasuk that it's talking about when he's giving land to pay off the debt. And what kind of land? The least valuable. Just as if he was bringing out a keli, it would be the least valuable land. Maram Shif says a little differently that we're making an analogy. Just as among kelim he would give the least valuable, so among land he's giving the least valuable. The Ramban, by the way, brings up a third possibility. The Ramban says when you get down to it, there's a big difference between paying off the loan and giving a mashkin. The mashkin, after all, it's not like the malva now has the ability to sell that mashkin in order to raise the money to pay back the loan. He has to hold on to it until the guy pays back, and even in the case of the psukim over there, he has to return it every night or every day, as the case may be.
He cannot sell it?
No, it's a mashkin. It's not meant to pay off the debt. It's just meant to be security until the guy pays off the debt. Yes. And again, as we talked about yesterday, if it's his pajamas, you got to return the same every night. If it's his work clothes, you got to return the same every day. Fine, but the point still remains. If it's something he needs by night, you have to return the same every night. If it's something he needs by day, you have to return the same every day. It's yours to a certain limited extent. The Minayim L'Bachoy Shekhoin HaMashkin, we looked a few weeks ago, but it's still, you can't sell it. So therefore, the Ramban says, therefore, when it comes to a mashkin, there is a very logical reason to distinguish between something which is pachas shebe kelim versus something which is a more expensive keli. You, the malva, would probably want that the guy should give you his most expensive keli as a mashkin. That way, he'll have an incentive to pay back the debt so he can get it back. Why would you want him to give you his least valuable thing? Nevertheless, the pasuk is implying that he can do that. Therefore, the same thing. When it comes to land, all you're entitled to is ziburis karka. Minat Torah.
Well, that's
not tikkun olam. We're talking minat Torah. We're not up to tikkun olam. We're not up to tikkun olam yet. Wait. Yeah.
What?
Tikkun olam is dirabanan. We're going to
hit. No. Well, we said yesterday could be a deraita.
In one case, we said that maybe tikkun olam means deraita. Ordinarily, tikkun olam means dirabanan.
Right. The mashkin at the end, if he defaults, it comes up in a certain time, you could sell the mashkin at the end.
Yeah, at the end. Umatam omar b'achoy b'beninus. So why indeed did the chachamim upgrade him to beninus? Traditionally, before tikkun olam, traditionally chinu delos b'fnei loivin. So you don't lock the door in front of people who want to borrow money. So Rava continues his argument. So when it comes to Yisayimim, you're not downgrading him from what he was really entitled to in the first place. Really, it's only Midrabanan that we're giving him Bainus. When it comes to Yisayimim, all we're saying is you're putting him back to the original Daraisa thing. Elahaka, but how are you comparing it to the case where you actually wrote Idis in the Shtar? Given the dinim midaraisa of Idis, in that case, once you wrote in the Shtar that you're entitled to Idis, then midaraisa you're entitled to Idis. Ah, so Tosfos is bringing up the question, are we talking over here that the concept of Shibud exists daraisa or not? We have to be saying, Tosfos says, that we're talking about according to the opinion that Shibud is daraisa. According to the opinion that the Shibud is only the Rabbanon, then yeah, then then in that case, you ought to be able to collect that even from the assignment. Okay. So the Gemara asked Ulu Rava. Now, according to Rava, who's saying that in this case, when they made this deal, in the Shtar Chov, they wrote that he's going to collect from Idis, and Rava is saying that even if you're collecting from Yisomim, you still get from Idis. Well, Tony, Avram Chayza. What does Rava do with the Braisa that Avram Chayza taught? Interesting. This is the Maharat Chayas brings the possibility from Seder Adoris that maybe the Jewish should be Avimi. Because he says, how is the guy called Avram? We know you're not supposed to name somebody Avram. It's Avraham, Avraham. Kolakorel Avram, Avraham, Avram, over Be'ese. So if his name was Avram, then he's actually the only person in all of Shas. So that's one counter argument that they say that maybe that only applies to Avram Avinu, not to other people. If he is named Avram, then he's the only person in Shas named with Avram Avinu's name. There is no Rav Avram anywhere in Shas.
Has to be the new way, Avraham.
Right. If you call Avraham, Avraham Avinu, if you call him Avram, the Gemara says in Brachot you're over Be'eseh, because the pasuk says, well, you call it Shem Avram. Avraham, yeah. So that's the discussion. Is that talking across the board? You can't name a person Avraham, or maybe is it only talking about Avraham Avinu, but you can name any. Okay. Anyway, so Avraham Chayza says, Ein Yifroim Nichisim, Elamen Ezeburit, Vachbilo Hein Nizokin. He says in his braisa that even a nizik can only collect from Yisomim from Ziburis. Now, while Nizokin didn't minoraisa v'idis, Nizokin, after all, are supposed to get idis minoraisa, and yet Avram Chayza is telling us that they go all the way down to Ziburis. So according to Rava, why would it be any different if he wrote idis in the Shtar? The answer is Hachab Mayaskin and Kohen Chayza idis the nizik, because Ziburis the mazik. We're back to the case that we talked about yesterday, where the idis of the nizik is the equivalent of the Ziburis of the mazik. Rabbi Shmuel, he said, then this braisa would be according to Rabbi Shmuel. Don't remember the raisa with the nizik shemin. And he says, the raisa, that you only go according to the nizik's best. So therefore, in that case, then that's all he's going to be entitled to, is Ziburis from the mazik. Our Mishnah told us that we upgraded him to get the Mazik Zibur, the Mazik Edis. And then again, by Yisraelim, we go back to the original Dintar. Still not a proof against the other. Now, when you explicitly wrote Idis in the Shtar, and there is where there you're clearly supposed to be getting Idis, that when it's coming to Yisraelim, you should have to go down to Ziburis. Yes. You might ask, Amy, still, how can you say that? Valtani Rabbi Lazar Niyosa means from Noyos. There's actually a place in Tanakh in Sefer Shmuel. It mentions that at one point when David was running away from Shaul, he went to Shmuel ben Noyos for Rama. Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that Noyos means the Beit Medrash, but it could be that it was actually the name of a place. Maybe it was a place near Rama where they had the Beit Medrash, and this Rebbe Lezer maybe is from there. Anyway, he says, "In the frame Nichsi Yisem Elamin Ezeburis Va'afir Lehin Idis." You can't get paid from Nichsi Yisem only from Ziburis, even if they are Idis. Now, what do you mean, my Afir Lehin Idis? Lav Apagav B'Chsim Idis B'Shtara. Doesn't that mean that even if you have the exact case we're talking about over here, where it said that in the Shtar you're supposed to be collecting from Idis, and yet Rabbi Eliezer Nigesa is telling us he still only gets from Ziburis? Again, contradicting Rava. The answer is no. Look, my Idis Shvoi Idis. No, because you could say that what do we mean that even though it says Idis, or you're not going to get from Idis, it's talking about a case of Shvoi Idis. Now, what does that mean? Rashi says that we're talking about that the guy owned Idis at the time, then somehow it got damaged. Rashi gives a couple of examples that it was stolen away from him. It was damaged by an east wind. It was flooded by the river. So Shvoi, Rashi would explain. Rashi doesn't say in so many words, but Rashi would be saying that Shvoi comes from a word in Aramaic Shof, which means moved away. So therefore, Shvoi Idis would mean that the Idis moved away from him.
Right.
When we learned about Yehuda's bones rolling around over there. Yeah. The Gemara says over there that when Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him, as we talked a couple of days ago, then his bones knitted back together. L'shafa. They moved back into position. L'shafa is an Aramaic word meaning. So according to Rashi, then the vote would be the guy owned Idis at the time, but now it's gone. So really, since there's no Idis available, then normally this Balchov is going to have to get Ziburis anyway, because of Latino Delta. Since he can't be getting Idis according to the Tanai, then Midaraisa, then we don't give him Bainanus, because there was never any P'nai for him to get Bainanus. It was either he's going to get Idis, but the Idis is gone. Therefore, you'd give him Zipporis. Midrabanan, because of Tikkun Olam, because Sholaitin of Dallas with Nelovin, we would have given him Bainanus, because if some over here were back to Zipporis. But only in that one case. Not necessarily in a case where the Idis still exists. Now. Yeah, he doesn't lose everything, he gets Zipporis. Tosfos has a number of problems with this explanation of Rashi, and therefore they explain differently. They explain that Shvoi comes from a word. There's a word that you find in Yeshaya, you find it in a few places in Yirmiyah, Shvoyim, which means river banks. The whole Shvoyim Marisam is a lashon that Tosfos brings. So therefore, you have that when you have field near a river, Tosfos explained, you usually have a strip of land right near the river where, practically speaking, you can't plant anything, because anything you plant there is going to get flooded by the river. Therefore, that land is there. So what do you do with that land, practically speaking, those little strips of land? You leave them for animals to graze in. You can't really plant anything in there. Therefore, those are even worse than Ziburis. Ziburis is land that you can plant, and you'll get some kind of crop out of it, just not very much. This, you can't even, practically speaking, plant at all. So therefore, that's what Tosfos explains what the word Shvoi Idis means. It means you have an Idis field, and next to it you have this little strip of land near the riverbank, which is only fit for grazing. So therefore, in other words, what we'd be saying is that even if all that's left to be collected from the Yisoimim is Shvoi Idis, which is even worse than ordinary Ziburis, fine, that's all you get. That's all you get. And this would be like what Rava said, Zomar Rava, his Ziburis, Vegamina Idis. If a person caused damage to somebody else's Ziburis, then that person will be entitled to collect from the Mazik Idis, from the Mazik that we're going to small a piece of land, obviously, but still he can collect from Idis. But Shvoi Idis, Vegamina Idis, but if Shvoi Idis, again, according to Rashi, that he had Idis and now it's lost, and according to Tosfos, the riverbank area, if the Hezek was done on Shvoi Idis, then you can't collect from Idis. All you're entitled to is collect from Beninus, because according to Tosfos, what it is that can't really be considered an ordinary hezek. That area is anyway meant for animals to graze in. The most you can consider it is like a regular balchov. Balchov gets from Beninus. So therefore, ordinarily you should get from Beninus. And again, Begabe Yasmos, Murabon, Adarai, so when it comes to your Simon, you're back to the Darai, so things, and you go down to Ziburis. So still no proof against the Rabba. That's what I've been mentioning before. Before we discuss the question, who is the halacha like in the end over here? We know usually the halacha is like Rava against Abaya. On the other hand, first of all, Abaya has on his side Mazutra. And second of all, Rava's answers over here to the various brises that we brought to contradict him, they're a bit of a dose. They're a bit forced. So maybe, therefore, after all, the halacha would be like Rav Nachman and Abaya, who supports him. And indeed, most Rishonim pass in that way. That doesn't matter. You can only, even never mind all the special cases that Robert is talking about. A Bal Chayv always only gets from Ziburis from the Yisraelim. And then, like I say, on top of that, you have a Machlokes. What if you explicitly wrote in the Shtar that you're entitled to collect from Edith even after I die? Does that override the ordinary thing that you collect from Ziburis only from Yisraelim, or is it still in effect even then?
That's
a Machlokes among Rishonim. I believe in Shulchan Aruch, I believe in Shulchan Aruch Paskin's point of the opinion that in that case, that even in that case, you get only from Ziburis, but I'm not sure about that.
Nice of the moment is a sign, no?
But the Tanayish Moment can't necessarily bind the Yisomim. If you can bind yourself with the Tanayish Moment, you can't bind. It doesn't matter. You still don't have the ability to make a Tanayi that's going to harm their interests, maybe.
That's a lot of money,
Mishnah said, "Ein yifroim nichti yisem element of zivurus."
So it would be different. Now that
we write and call shvar arad. Right, that's what the Beit Shmuel is pointing out, that you do get from Edith if you're collecting while the husband is alive.
Oh,
but again, if it's after he dies, then it's subject to the same machlokas we're showing. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, "Ein yifroim nichti yisem element of zivurus." Boy, Rav Achad boy, Bra'am. Yisomim shamru. These yisomim that we're talking about for all this time, that you can only collect from ziburis when you're collecting from them. Ketanim ayafilu gdolim. Do we mean only if they're children, or do we mean even if they're adults? Because after all, granted they're adults, they know how to manage their own affairs, but still, they don't. We'll spell it out. Do we say takantahu da avod rabbanon gabayasmi? Do we say that it's a matter of a takana that the Rabbanon made in favor of the Yisraelim, therefore the Tanim over Rabbanon with Gerlim Loi over Rabbanon, so therefore they made it in favor of Tanim, who may not know what's going on over here, and we need to protect their interests, but not for Gerlim. Maybe it's just because when the Halvar was taken out, what did we say before? That the Malva has to be able to collect from Bainanus because Loitino Delos with their Loivin. But when the Loivin is borrowing money, You don't expect that the loiver is going to die before he has a chance to pay it back. To have a noel delos, which then if he would have thought of that and he would say, you know what, I'm only getting the Buddhist out of it, then forget it, I can't be bothered lending you money. Maybe we don't say that. We would say that there's no matter of ne'ilas delos over here, because the Malva would say, as long as I know while the guy is alive that I can collect from Bainanus, then fine. That's going to be the normal situation. I'm not going to be worried about the more far fetched situation that after I lend him money, he's going to die and I'm going to be left with only Ziburis. And therefore, he'll kachat el gedolim nami. Maybe therefore the din would apply even to gedolim as well, because it's not a matter of a takana. It's just a matter of what the Malva himself had in mind at the time.
Older guy or younger?
Well, okay. 92. Right, okay, fine. Toshma. Come, let's bring a proof. To Tani Abaye Kshisha. Abaye Kshisha. Kshisha means the elder one. So we have the famous Abaye. This is an elder Abaye from a previous generation of Amoraim. So he taught a Braitha. Yisomim Shamru, these Yisomim that we're talking about, Gdolim, the Ein Tzarach Lemaksanim. It means adult Gdolim, and needless to say, children. Why? Who says that's talking about the din of only collecting from Ziburis? Maybe Abaye Kshisha's Braitha is talking about a different din that applies uniquely to collecting from Yisomim. Namely, there's a din that when you're collecting from Nichsi Yisomim, you always have to swear in order to be able to collect. Even in cases where if you were collecting from the original person who owed the money, from the original loiver, you wouldn't have to swear, but when you're collecting from Yisomim, you always have to. That you actually owed the money, because the shvua is that he wasn't already paid off. If he was collecting from the father, then if the father argued I paid you off, then we would make the guy swear in order to be able to collect. If he doesn't argue that, then fine, he waived that right. Yisomim, we always, even Gdolim, we always act on their behalf and make that payment. How do you know? What do you mean you still owed that money? Maybe he already paid you off. Swear that he didn't pay you off yet. So maybe that's talking about Shavua. To guzzle the mila d'avur k'katan dummy. Because then you could say when it comes to a Shavua, even an adult Yasim is sort of like a child when it comes to his father's affairs. Because he doesn't know everything that his father did. He may not know whether a certain debt was paid off or not. So So therefore, he may think that it wasn't paid off because he didn't find anything among his father's papers that it was, but maybe it really was, and therefore we're going to make the guy swear. Maybe not necessarily when it comes to the matter of collecting from Ziburis. Maybe, again, that's a matter of takana de rabbanon for the sake of the assignment, and therefore only tanim, not zolim, who can manage their own affairs. Bottom line, halacha, yisayimim shamu zolim vein tzarech lemetanim, vein l'shvur, vein l'ziburis. No, this thing that was saying, ein nefraim v'nichti yisayimim el b'shvur, and element is a Buddhist, it applies to yisayimim across the board, whether they are, whether they're adults or whether they're children. Not a fear. We're saying that in the case of a malva, we're saying that we're not worried about lechino delos b'chnei loivin, because he expected that the loivin himself was going to live long enough to be able to pay it off. Therefore, he's not going to avoid lending money on the off chance that the guy may die and he's going to be downgraded to Ziburis before he has a chance to collect. So therefore, we're not worried about nilos delos. And when it comes to shvur, again, when it comes to shvur, even adult children don't necessarily know every single detail of what their father did. And therefore we make the person swear before he collects anything.
Just by lack of knowledge.
Yes.
Assuming.
Yes. Tosfos, by the way, points out that there's yet another din, really, that when it comes to collecting from Yisomim, ordinarily we say, it brings from Gemara and Erchin, that ordinarily you don't collect from Nichsi Yisomim anyway while they're young, unless they're actually losing money on it. For example, their father had borrowed money from a guy, and afterwards the estate is having to pay interest on the loan, and that is eventually going to deplete everything. So in a case like this, if you're collecting from Tanim, what are you talking about collecting with a shrua, and what are you talking about collecting from Ziburis? But from Tanim, you can't be collecting anyway, because you tell the person, wait until they get older, until they're able to argue for themselves in Beis Din, and then you can take them to Beis Din.
That doesn't get involved.
That's the point. Beis Din doesn't get involved unless the Yisomim themselves are suffering a financial loss from it. So Tosfos talks about a situation that we are actually talking about that they borrowed money from a guy who's taking Rivis, but he's a ger toshav, or he accepted on himself that he's going to a certain extent follow halacha in these kinds of things. So fine, there is ribis echelos behem. You gotta get the debt paid off before the interest eats up everything they have. But nevertheless, he still has to take a shavua, and he still can only collect from Ziburis.
Right.
Tosfos points out one more possibility, that the Rav Yochanan in the Gemara there in Erchin says that one exception where you do take money away from Yisomim, even though they're not, is in order to pay off a ksuba. So we're talking about ksuba over here then. Mishnah continued, "Ein nefroim in the chasim shabbatim b'makom sheyesh b'nei chorin," that you don't get, a bal chorin can't get paid from the chasim shabbatim, from property that previously was sold to a third party after the loan was taken out, when there's b'nei chorin available. Property that actually the loiva still has in his possession at the time. So boyra b'chad b'ba'ami. But matana heyach. What happens if the shibud is not what happens if the loiva, instead of selling this property to somebody, what if he gave it to him as a present? So take for example, all he had at the beginning was Zaininus and Ziburis. So if he had sold his Beninus, there's no question that the Mishnah is telling us that the Baal Chayiv is going to have to take from Ziburis, even though Beninus exists, because from Shabbatim rather than Bnei Chorin. What happens if instead the Beninus was given as a present to somebody? What? And for now, it's not called Shabbatim, yeah.
That's
the question. Do we say that now still the Baal Chayiv can only collect from the Bnei Chorin, which happened to be Ziburis? Or in this case, is he entitled to go after the Shabbatim, which are in the other party's hands? Because takanta hu de'avad rabbanim mishum seder l'kuchus. One way we can look at it is that the rabbanim made a takana that you can only collect from the Shabbatim if there are no bnei chorin, for the sake of avoiding a hefset on the part of the buyers. It's true the buyer knows to a certain extent he's taking a risk by buying nechasim where the guy already has a shibud. Nevertheless, you want to try to avoid causing him a loss if you can help it. So therefore, if they took an oil, we're going to say don't collect from him, collect from Bnei Chorin, even if they're Ziburis. Abel Matana.
Then to collect from the Hurim that is Boris,
then from Mishabodim. Exactly. Well, yeah, from but in the case of a present, the other guy has no loss from it. Easy come, easy go. It's not like he had to pay for it. Or maybe you can look at it this way. Even when it comes to a present, he laughed at Islay Hanomin, Matana. After all, why would he have given him a present? Why would he have gifted him some land? Must be that he got some Hanah from him. Therefore, in a way, it is sort of a loss, sort of like the loss that a Lakeach would have. He didn't actually pay money for it. They did him some other kind of favor or something that now the guy had gifted him land. Maybe you can only take the Ziburis then. All we can take is the Ziburis, which is Bnei Chorin, and not the Beninus, which is Mishabadim. Makshisha, the son of Rav Chista, said to Rav Ashi, we've learned about Makshisha before. We had him at Subas and here and there. In various places, Rav Ashi and Tosfos discussed that Rav Chista had two sons. Both of them were named Mar. They're unusual. You have two sons with the same name, but okay. So one of them was called Pshisha, which means the elder, and one was called Yenuka, which means the younger. In a few places, Rashi explains Makshisha was actually the older one, and now Yenuka was the younger brother. And Tosfos, in a few places, says the other way around. Makshisha was the younger one because he was born when Rav Chista was older. Now Yenuka is the older one. He was born when his father, Rav Chista, was younger. Anyway, so Makshisha says to Rav Ashi, Toshma, a brisa says, "Shchiv merasha alma truma fayim zuz v'toini v'gimel meis v'toini v'dalav meis v'toini." If a shchiv merah says on his deathbed, "Give 200 zuz to Reuven and 300 to Shimon and 400 to Levi," ein omim kol akodim m'shtav zocha. We don't say that we don't say that Reuven gets ahead of Shimon and Shimon gets ahead of Levi, which would mean to say, I mean, so what do we say? 2 plus 3 plus 400 equals 900. What if the guy doesn't have 900 zuz? What if he has less than? What if he only has 700? What if he has whatever? We don't say that Reuven gets everything that he's supposed to get, and then whatever's left goes to Shimon, and if there's enough left from that, then it goes to Levi. We say that all three of them are on an equal level. But the fact is, you don't have $900 to divide among them. So therefore, in other words, as opposed to the case that we're going to say in a second, where he says the Achrav, where he actually establishes an order of precedence. Like this, he didn't establish an order of precedence. He just mentioned three names and said one gets 200, one gets 200, one gets 300, one gets 400. They're all on an equal level, and therefore, what's going to happen is that if there's not enough money to give all of them, then all of them get proportionally. If, let's say, for example, instead of $900 available, if all there is $600, let's say, so then Reuven, instead of getting 200, which would be two-ninths of what the guy had given in his bequest, he's going to get two-ninths of 600, which is going to come out to 133 and change. Shimon is going to get 200. Levi is going to get, whatever, 267 and change. Therefore, also because there's no precedence between them, so now if a shtar chayv comes out after the guy died, after the shtigmana died, somebody brings a shtar chayv, he owed me money. Which one of them do we take it away from? Goes and mikulam, he actually collects from all of them. Which means, again, it actually says proportionally, yeah, the proportions are still kept the same way, yeah.
So the one who received the most is taken the most.
Yeah. Now Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Chananel. We learned a Mishnah in Ksubas last year involving, it was actually in today's Shlosha Parakim of Rambam as well, a case where a person had several wives and each of them had a ksuba of a different amount. And in the end, when he died and left an estate, and they're supposed to be collecting the ksubas, there's not enough to pay all of them. So we learned a whole elaborate formula that's supposed to be done. You don't just divide it among them equally, because then some of them may end up getting more than what's supposed to be for their ksuba. What you do is you sort of go about it stepwise. You first pay, you first you see if there's enough to pay off the minimum size tsuba, then you split it into portions. You split it into portions big enough to give that one of her tsuba. Okay, so the way that Amnon gives the example is as follows. Let's say so you had four wives. Let's say one of them has a tsuba of 100, 200, 300, 400. That's how much their tsubas were. So if he left 1,000, then good, we're going to pay them all off and we're done. What happened? He only left, let's say, 800. So then you can't divide 800 into four and say each of them gets 200. The first one's only supposed to get 100. What you do is you start as follows. You start by dividing up 400 of it. Each of them gets 100. Good. The first one has gotten her 100. She's out of the picture now. We have another 400 now to divide among three women. Again, we're not going to divide it equally among them. The second one's going to get too much. We divide it so that we take another 100 out of it and give it to each of them. So far now, the first one got 100 and she's out of the picture. Each of the other three got 200, and we've now disposed of $700 out of the 800 that he left. So now the second one's also out of the picture. She's gotten her whole silver paid off. The third and the fourth one each get 50 of what's left. So you don't go proportionally. You don't say the fourth one should be getting more than the third because she had a larger tsuba. In the end, what happens is the third and the fourth both wind up with 250. What?
Why should the fifth one get the whole amount? I mean,
right, exactly. We had a whole
discussion. And it's not according to the words of the
Shtidmarava. No,
forget about Shtidmarava here. One second. Forget about the Shtidmarava here. One second. Rabbeinu Chananel is saying the same logic as we use over there, that we try to pay off as much as possible the ones with the lesser claims first, and then the ones with the greater claims split whatever's remaining among them. Rabbeinu Chananel wants to say the same thing over here. It wouldn't be proportionally. It would rather be that the ones who have the smaller claim get paid off first.
So we said initially 400, 300, and 200.
So in the case that we have over here, where the Shchivrat said give 200 to Pliny and 300 to 200 to Reuven, 300 to Shimon, 400 to Levi, and now a Shtar Chayv comes out that some of that money is owed to Yehuda.
Right.
What we're going to do, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, is we're going to do the same kind of thing. We're going to figure out how much that Chayv is and see, we're going to take away. We're going to start by dividing and seeing. So the first person, the one who got 200, is the chayv more than 200? If it is, then if it's more than 200. If it's more than 600, let's say. If the chayv is more than 600, that's out of the originally 900 was given. So if the chayv is 600, the first person is going to lose everything because we're going to say each one is on the hook for 200. So the first one is going to have to pay 200, and then he's out of the picture.
He doesn't
get anything. Yeah, he was supposed to get, but because it has to be given to the Baal Chayv now, then therefore he winds up losing what he was supposed to get. Then the remaining amounts are going to be split like that among Shimon and Levi, and again it may end up depending how large the chayv is. Shimon may end up losing everything that he got, and only Levi.
Why don't we do it this way? If they had 900, that is another the chayv is 600. Without the chayv, they would have given, let's say, 4, 3, and 2.
Yeah.
So instead of giving 4, 3, and 2 out of 900. You gave 4, 3, and 2 out of...
That is what Rashi is saying, that we go proportionally. Yeah. Rabbeinu Chananel wants to say the same kind of thing as we do over there by the tzuba is the same kind of thing we do over here. Tosfos himself says, V'nirish yesh l'chalik. It seems as
we talked about them.
Professor Alman, the Nobel Prize winner in economics a few years back, had a whole discussion about it once, about that business by the tzuba, about why it's divided that way, yeah. But anyway, so Rabbeinu Chananel wants to say you do the same logic over here. Tosfos says maybe not necessarily. Anyway,
what does
this
say that the
Buddhist
should override everything else?
Fine, but he says, Baal Chayv still has to be paid.
Right.
Just means these guys get their matana. They don't need a shtar, they don't need a kinyan, they don't need nothing. But the fact is, it says Baal Chayv to be paid.
They don't come first before the Baal Chayv.
No. Okay, anyway, continue the Braisa. Avol in Omer, Tshinuma Sayim Zuz L'Ploini, but what happens if it was different? The Shchivna said, give 200 to Reuven, the Achrav L'Ploini, and after him give 300 to Shimon, the Achrav L'Ploini, and after him give 400 to Levi. Then, Omrim, then we say kolakodim mishtazach, whichever one comes earlier is the one who has the greater ability to collect, because he specifically meant that I'm giving 200 to Reuven, and after him, only if there's more left after the 200, is Shimon going to collect cash and so forth. Lefichach, therefore, yosol of shtarchov, so therefore if a shtarchov comes out, goyim and achron, then the balchov collects only from the last one, because he's the one in the lowest position. Ein lo, if he doesn't have enough, goyim mishalafanav, then he goes back to the next one, Shimon. Ein lo, goyim mishalafanav, if not, then he goes back to Reuven. Now, what's the point? So what's the point? Even suppose that Reuven was given beninus, suppose we're not talking about money, suppose we're talking about land. So Reuven was given 200 out of Beninus. Shimon and Levi, let's say, were given their 300 and 400 out of Ziburis. We're still saying the Ziburis govim and Beninus like govim. We're still saying that this Balchoiv is only entitled to collect from first from Levi and then from Shimon and only then from Reuven. So only he has to start from Ziburis. Shmaminav matzana nami over Rabbanah takana, which shows that we make the takana to protect the recipients even when it comes to a matzana, which is what we were trying to prove over here. Answer is no. No, because you know what? We're not talking about over here when the Shivmana said, give Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. He wasn't talking about giving it to them as a present. He was talking about give it to them to pay off debts that I owe them. I owe Reuven 200, I owe Shimon 300, etc. Okay, well, Tanu Kama, or he said give. And the answer is Tanu B'choiv. He meant give it to pay off my debt. Okay, and the question is, well, actually, started the man kodim. Fine, in that case, then what are we saying? That depends whether he mentioned them, whether he just mentioned the names, or whether he said anything about Akhrov or whatever. Just look, whichever one has the earlier shtalchov is the one who has the greater shibud.
So the date of the chov is what's...
That's what we're saying. In other words, instead of going in the order that he mentioned Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, or Akhrov, whatever, go according to the actual dates on the shoris. And this is the lesson story. Okay, we're talking about that there was no shtar. It's a milval pair. It was a verbal loan. Okay, v'al kol akodim shtar. Didn't we say in the braisa whichever one comes earlier in the shtar, implying that they have started? The answer is the shtar katta. We're not talking about a shtar chov. We're talking about whichever one is listed first in the tzava, in the shtar that was written about his will. But therefore, you can't prove anything. That if we're saying that these people are bali chov, you can't prove anything about a matana.
But if there is a star...
If there's a star, then yeah, we go to the star, that's right. The Iboi same, or another possibility, I feel a matzana now. I mean, maybe you could say that after all, the Braisa is talking about a case of matzana. The Loikasha, but what do we mean when we say my goyim and achron? It means ein nifsed el achron. It means the last one is going to be the one who winds up losing. Meaning, let's say, for example, let's assume that in the case of a matana, maybe we don't make this takana. We say that you got a matana, tough luck, you didn't put anything into it, therefore it can be taken away from you. But what's going to happen? The guy said, achrav and achrav, the shrimina, which means he himself wants, his interest is that he wants Reuven to have the strongest possible claim to the nechassim, and after him Shimon, and after him Levi, the first one. So let's say even Reuven got the beninus. What's going to happen? The Malda now, when he comes and takes away, he's going to take from Reuven, let's say, not as we assumed before, he's going to take from Levi, and only if Levi doesn't have, he's going to go to Shimon, etc. He will start with Reuven, because Reuven has the Beninus, because we're not making the Tekana to protect people who got a Matana. Reuven, in turn, is going to take Levi to Beis Din and say, wait a minute now, I have the stronger claim on the property than you, because you're supposed to be after me. So therefore, I have the right to the Ziburis that the guy gave you, and I'll take that from you. So it winds up, the Levi winds up being, even though the Baal Chayv hadn't gone directly to Levi, he still is, after all, the low man on the totem pole, and he winds up losing. The Ibai same, or yet another possibility, the Shavukul Aladodi, you could say, very simple, the Braita is talking about a case where all three of them have property of the same quality. We're not talking about Beninus versus Ziburis. No, but nevertheless, the point is that the point still remains, that the Braita is still telling us, don't think that in the case of Achrav, that you can go after any one of them want. No, you have to go after Levi, and only if he doesn't have enough. Because he wouldn't have realized that distinction between whether he says Achrav or not.
No, we would not have realized that.
Because it may not be
Shnach.
You should know something. Tosfos points out another possible wrinkle in it. What if it wasn't 200, 300, and 400? What if he had said, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi each get 200? Well, then Tosfos says, because he mentioned, if he says Reuven gets 200, and Shimon gets 200, and Levi gets 200, then we say that Reuven comes ahead of Shimon, and Shimon comes ahead of Levi, even though he didn't say Achrov. Why? Because... for the Tiberius. Why? Because if he had meant to not establish an order of precedence, if he meant the law on an equal level, he would have just said Reuben, Shimon, and Levi each get 300. The fact that he said Reuben 200, Shimon 200, Levi 200 means that he wants to establish an order of precedence. Yeah.